Hello, podcasters, and welcome once again to this series of podcasts brought to you in association with Kilkenny Library Services and the Government's Decade of Centenaries Fund through Kilkenny County Council. Now, in the previous podcast, we set the scene of what was happening in Kilkenny Jail before the great jailbreak of the 22nd of November 1921. The tunnel had been built, but the plans were nearly scuppered at the last minute when security was increased at the prison. And on the very day of the planned escape, the governor of the jail was replaced. However, besides all this unexpected drama, just before 7 p.m. on Tuesday evening, the 22nd of November, the prisoners were ready to make their escape bid. Although by now they were nearly an hour later than scheduled, the prisoners made their way to the entrance of the tunnel in a preordained order as not to arouse suspicion. The warden on duty amongst the prisoners, who was a man called Tom Power, was purposely distracted by a prisoner who invited Power into his cell to play some draughts. This was a regular occurrence as Power was liked by the prisoners as he was friendly and sympathetic to them. The prison OC, Martin Keeley, had given each prisoner the number of their place in the escape queue so there wouldn't be a free-for-all. Tom McCarrick was the first into the tunnel. This was more for practical reasons than anything else. With his mining experience up in Roscommon and Leitrim, he would be responsible for breaking through that final upper layer of clay at the end of the 50-foot long tunnel, then getting out onto the open road and helping everyone else out. Due to his stature in Kilkenny, Father Delahunty was offered the prime position of the next person to enter the tunnel, but Father Delahunty refused, stating that prisoners with death sentences should go before him, followed by prisoners with life or longer sentences. That meant Edward Punch and Timothy Murphy would be near the first out, who just a few months previously had been sentenced to death, having been caught with guns. Punch and Murphy had been very active in attacking the Crown forces in and around Limerick City. They were granted a stay of execution and their sentences were instead commuted to life sentences with penal servitude. Tom McCarrick, after digging out and breaking through the final 18 inches of earth, pulled himself to the surface. He used a poker to pierce through the final 6 inches to make sure they weren't underneath anything solid. I should also probably mention that this was an era prior to tarmac, so the roads were basically just hard, compacted earth or clay. Upon emerging from the road, McCarrick was shocked to discover that the tunnel exit was much closer to the main gate of the prison than had been anticipated, approximately 18 metres or 20 yards, and was also near the junction of Gale Road and St. Rock Street. He quickly ran across the street to a row of terraced houses and asked for help. After McCarrick, the next prisoners out were, as we said, prisoners with life or long sentences. So that's Punch and Murphy from Limerick, then William McNamara from Clare, Frank Pine from Tipperary, Patrick O'Halloran from Tipperary, and Lawrence Condon from Fermoy. McNamara was tasked with helping the evacuees out of the tunnel. However, just as Condon came out onto the street, a warder appeared right behind him. Both men getting the fright of their lives, no doubt. Thinking on his feet, using a piece of pipe he had in his hand, Condon pretends to have a gun and pushed it into the warder. Because of the poor visibility, the warder assumed it was a real gun and quickly surrendered. With the help of Pine, Punch and Halloran, Condon brought the warder to a nearby house where he was tied up and guarded until the remaining prisoners escaped. In his words, this is how William McNamara of Clare told of events of that evening. Quote, "The escape plans were explained. A prisoner called McCarrick was to lead the way through the tunnel. Four others, including myself, were to follow him. As soon as we got outside the tunnel, four men were to do guard outside the warden's houses, which were right in front of the exits. I was to remain to haul out the others as they appeared. The escape worked out excellently, and most of the men had got through. I was surprised, though, when no more men were coming along, as I had been counting those who had got clear and knew there were others to come. I shouted through the exit hole a few times, but got no answer, and then heard through the tunnel the prison staff shouting, and I knew the game was up. I collected the three Limerick men and followed in the direction in which the others disappeared into the darkness." End quote. As the prisoners were escaping, Paddy Donoghue, who lived on St. Rock Street, was walking home from his work on the railways when, to his astonishment, he saw men coming out of a hole in the road. One of the Kilkenny escapees recognised Donoghue, who was at the time a very prominent Dixborough and Kilkenny senior hurler. They appealed to him, "Paddy, will you help us?" Donoghue immediately enlisted the help of his friend Matthew Power, another Kilkenny hurler who would go on to have a near 20-year stellar career in the Black and Amber, and who also lived nearby. Just 2 months previously, both Donoghue and Power had lined out for Kilkenny against Dublin in the Leinster final in Croke Park, where both got to meet Michael Collins before the game. There are a lot of famous pictures from that game, you will see them online. Now they were helping some of Michael Collins' own IRA soldiers to escape to freedom. Knowing the lay of the land, both hurlers helped lead the different escapees from the area. By this time, men and women had come out of nearby terrace houses and helped pull the prisoners from the tunnel as well, while also pointing them in the direction of the countryside. Meanwhile, inside the prison, the warder Tom Power became suspicious, maybe by the unusual quietness that had fallen on the prison, or having noticed a lot of men entering the recreation cell that had accessed the tunnel. He went to investigate, and upon identifying what was happening, said, "Ah, lads, you shouldn't do this while I'm on duty." Power was quickly restrained and gagged, but eventually his warden colleagues noticed that something was awry, and an alarm was raised. In the meantime, however, 44 of the 55 prisoners in the short-term wing escaped. This was impressive considering it would have been difficult to crawl along one's stomach in a dark, claustrophobic tunnel with very little air. The escapees included Martin Keeley, the prison OC and former OC of Kilkenny's 4th Battalion, Father Delahunty, the rebel priest who we mentioned already, James Hanrahan of Inistigreg na Mana and later a colonel in the Irish Army, who had been OC of the Kilkenny 5th Battalion, Michael Burke of Tipperary, who was recovering from a long hunger strike of nearly 3 months he had partaken in during the previous year down in Cork, Joe O'Connor, OC of the 3rd Dublin Battalion, and also Con Conroy, who had been an intelligence officer with the Cork No. 1 Brigade. More prisoners could have escaped, except one of the escapees, believed to be David Connolly from Clonay in Waterford, brought a suitcase with him. This eventually blocked the tunnel for the remainder of the prisoners. Connolly was clever enough to drag his suitcase behind him, so when it got stuck, he still managed to escape. Behind the white suitcase was the unfortunate 18-year-old Morris Welch from Limerick, who had to reverse backwards towards the tunnel, where he was quickly apprehended by the waiting wardens. So close, but yet so far. As McNamara had said, he could hear the shouts of the prison wardens through the tunnel and knew no more prisoners would be making their exit. Just before 8 p.m. on that night, the loud alarms were sounded that could be heard all over Kilkenny City. Fairy lights, kind of like flares, were also shot into the night's air. Nearly 200 Crown Force personnel converged on the prison from the military barracks on the other side of town and also from the RIC barracks that used to be on Parliament Street. Although the prisoners had only begun escaping less than an hour beforehand, and the last one had only got out about 50 minutes previously, they had disappeared into the countryside by crossing fields at the end of St. Rock Street. They spread out in groups of between 4 to 8 people, with one leader having been pre-assigned, with groups delineated usually by their county of origin. Also alerted by the Hooters were members of the 1st Kilkenny IRA Battalion based in the city. Martin Cassidy, the Brigade Intelligence Officer in Kilkenny, had got word from inside the prison that the prisoners would be attempting an escape bid that night. He had notified others to act as scouts and be alert that night for the possible escape of prisoners. They were as shocked as anyone that 44 men escaped from an underground tunnel. Bill Oakes, one of the local IRA officers, helped direct the group of prisoners. Also there was John Welsh of Greg Namana, who had arrived to help the escapees. They were also able to point the men in the right direction. Those escaping with the hurlers nearly got caught and had to hide under a bridge at the small Braga River. Edward Ball from Enniscorthy and his group of 4 escapees tracked east in the direction of their home county, Wexford. By the following morning, after an arduous journey through the fields and dikes on a dark, wet, cold night, they reached Ballymurphy, County Carlow, and that's about 35 kilometres away from Kilkenny. Here they located friends and were driven the rest of the journey to Enniscorthy by horse and cart. Having walked some distance west of Kilkenny City, helped by the hurlers Donoghue and Power, Father Delahunty and Tom McCarrick's group of escapees took the risk of asking for food and water at a farmhouse they came upon, who luckily was the friendly William Welsh of Ballycallan, who fed and watered them. They were then pointed in the direction of Tehan's of Shipton House, Kilmana. The Tehan sisters Molly and Kissy were leading members of Cumann na Mon in Kilkenny. They gave the men new clothes and socks, which was very important after a night's traipsing through the mucky fields and streams. The Tehans then helped usher the men, about 8 altogether, to safe houses in the area the next day, in case their house in Kilmana was raided, as it was a well-known safe house. Father Delahunty was later brought to a safe house, Egan's of Mullinahone. Another bunch of exhausted escapees arrived at Duckett's Grove, County Carlow, about 45 kilometres away from Kilkenny Jail, where they received assistance from the local Cumann na mBan there, who had been organising training camps at that location. To quote the officer there, Linda McBoyney, "One morning we got 11 men who had escaped from Kilkenny Jail by a tunnel that they had made and had walked all the way to Duckett's Grove. They were all very exhausted and ill when they arrived, and we had to nurse them back to health." End quote. Lawrence Condon of Fermoy and a large group of escapees ended up on a farm near Cuffs Grange, about 8 kilometres away, where they were later smuggled by pony and trap via Ballingarry, County Tipperary, to their home counties. It is possible that, unlike the War of Independence era, the truce meant that the public were less afraid of the consequences of helping fugitives at this time. Sean Keogh of Kells, County Meath, and his group of escapees went northwards. Keogh had been one of those who had nearly got free in the Curragh Tunnel just 2 months earlier, but this time his luck was in. As he stated later in life, quote, "I was in a group of 6 men who a couple of mornings later met a Bill Callaghan in Castlecomer, who gave us a revolver each. We then walked to Dublin and stayed at St. Enda's College, that's Pearce's school, that night. Next day I bought a suit of clothes and came home." End quote. William McNamara and his group of escapees had a very close shave, just to quote him. "Though we had not the faintest idea of the countryside, we got safely into the fields outside Kilkenny and kept wandering further and further away from the city. After a couple of hours, we heard a number of lorries coming towards us. We were then at a bridge which had a blind arch and we crept into it. The lorries stopped right overhead. They belonged to the military, who were obviously on our tracks. A searchlight was flashed on both sides of the bridge, but our luck held and we were not seen. A small party of soldiers were left on guard on the bridge while the lorries moved off. They were not long gone when they returned again and picked up the guards and drove off. As soon as the coast was clear, we resumed our trek. In the early hours of the morning, we saw a light in a house and headed for us. Inside, we found a man sitting at the kitchen fire and told him our story. He led us to the captain of the local IRA company. In his place, we washed, cleaned our clothes and had a meal. Through his assistance, we were passed along from one battalion area to another until finally, after a couple of days, we landed in Doon, County Limerick. The veteran mid-Limerick IRA man, Sean Carl, took me across the Shannon to Clonlara, and from there got a pony and trap in which he drove me to Broadford, County Clare." End quote. So, following the great Kilkenny jailbreak of Tuesday evening, the 22nd of November 1921, not one of the 44 prisoners who escaped that night were recaptured. They were required, though, to stay on the run until after the treaty was signed. As reports emerged of the great escape, the majority of the populace greeted the news with a sense of delight. The humiliation caused to the British authorities was also a source of great amusement. The escapees were natives of 18 Irish counties, and as such were seen as heroes by those in their local area. The news of a jailbreaking priest also added to the extraordinary story, while even the more conservative Kilkenny Moderator newspaper reported the story in a humorous light. Quote, "The escape of the popular priest, Father Delahunty, caused intense delight in Kilkenny, especially as it is believed he is the first clergyman in the present movement who won his way without leave or license to freedom." End quote. The Moderator also reported how one escapee, Lawrence Condon, visited a house immediately opposite jail and impressed on them the necessity for absolute quietness, but this was quite unnecessary as everyone was friendly. It went on to praise the escape as one of the most cleverly planned and daring instances of a jailbreak in history. The Kilkenny people called this the greatest prison-breaking exploit on record and commented that all cinema stunts were knocked into a cocked hat when compared to the real-life feat of the Kilkenny escapees. It was not only the Irish media that reported the event. The Kilkenny people's assertion that the name of Kilkenny was featured in the press throughout the civilised world was not a gross exaggeration. Evidently, stories involving jailbreaks and escape tunnels appeared to have universal appeal, and the story was syndicated all around the world. For example, in far-off Australia, most of the national and local newspapers reported on the exploits of the Kilkenny fugitives. Similarly, the Kilkenny jailbreak featured in the New York Times the day after the escape on the 23rd of November 1921. It was said afterwards that the Kilkenny escape tunnel was believed to be the longest dug for a prison escape up to that point in history and was only surpassed in World War II. I can't confirm or deny that, but it's a good claim to fame to have. In the aftermath of the breakout, the former governor, John Boland, who had initially been transferred to Dundalk prison, was suspended from duty as a penalty for his management of the Kilkenny jail and was soon forced to retire. During the official inquiry into the escape, Boland stated that his life since 1917 had been a living hell, and that in public he was treated more or less as a living leper because of his occupation and prior association with Ash's death in Mountjoy. Now, I should mention the very misfortunate 12 prisoners of A-Wing who didn't make it out. They got very badly punished. One of those, James Farrar of Dungarvan, said that the remaining prisoners were badly beaten up by the military who came into the jail the next day. James's brother, though, Larry Farrar, was one of those who had escaped. All the remaining prisoners of the Kilkenny jail complex, so that's the short-term and long-term wings, were transferred to either Waterford or Limerick prisons, and the jail was closed down by the Crown Force military authorities on the 10th of December 1921, just a few weeks later. It was, however, reopened during the Civil War by the Free States authorities. And indeed, there was another jailbreak from the prison. This time, the anti-treaty IRA escaped, not as much as the November 1921 one, but there was more escapes exactly 1 year later in 1922. This time, it was the Free State authorities that were embarrassed. Kilkenny Jail was finally formally closed down by an act of the Oireachtas in 1929. The act stated that for the purposes of economy and efficiency in the administration of the prison system in Saoirstadt Éireann, it has been decided to reduce the number of prisons as sufficient prison accommodation is available elsewhere. The prison at Kilkenny, in the county of Kilkenny, notwithstanding that it is the only prison in the said county, shall on or after date of this order be wholly closed. All prisoners who have been confined in the prison at Kilkenny shall be committed to and kept in custody in either Mountjoy Prison in the city of Dublin or Waterford Prison in the county borough of Waterford, whichever is more convenient. End quote. In August 1948, 20 years after its closure, Kilkenny Jail was knocked to the ground in order to make way for badly needed houses in the city. The whole demolition process took a number of months. Very interestingly, some of the rubble was actually used to build up the stands at Nolan Park GA grounds in Kilkenny. Unlike the miss of Hill 16 or Hill 60 as it was originally called at Croke Park, which was not built by 1916 rubble, this one appears very much to be true. Indeed, some of the rubble could have ended up in the foundations of your very home, as the council offered the rubble as infill free of charge to anyone that wanted to take it away. They also sold off bricks that were taken from the jail for 1,000 bricks for £4, which was a fairly good deal. I was recently listening to Marianne Vaughan's Grey's History Show on KCLR, and they had a nice story on about one of the men who escaped from Kilkenny Jail. Jim Pollock, who was from Mary Street in Cork City, went on to get married and have a family. His youngest daughter, Carmel, ended up marrying a Kilkenny man, though. Carmel Lenehan would be known to many as the owner of Lenehan's Bar at 10 Castlecomer Road, right near the entrance to the barracks there. Her father had been sentenced to 5 years and was one of the newly arrived prisoners from Spike Island. In a quirk of historical face, as Jim Pollock was marched down from Kilkenny Station to Kilkenny Jail in November 1921, he would have passed Kilkenny House Pub, known as O'Gorman's now, where his future son-in-law was reared. Carmel and her son, also called Jimmy, told the story beautifully. Now, I'll just finish up with the interesting story of the subsequent life of one of the escapees. Father Pat, aka P.H. Delahunty, the rebel priest, was probably the most well-known of the escapees that day. He had trained to be a priest in St. Kieran's College Seminary, being ordained in 1905. His suspension from ministering by the Catholic Church in Austria, which had been instigated during the War of Independence, still remained during the Civil War and afterwards, as he was seen as an extremist. So he had no other choice but to return to live with his mother in Corramarn, Carrageen, Munkine, and was barred from performing his priestly duties in the diocese. Even when his mother died in 1924, Pat was not allowed to participate at her funeral mass in Carrageen Church due to his suspension. He'd had enough. With the help of a friend, Father Barden from Canaspic, who was based in America, he was able to source a job there. In 1926, he moved to Kansas in America. He had been in contact with the friendly bishop of that state, who agreed to allow him to minister there. He served in a number of parishes and then became chaplain of Leavenworth State Penitentiary for many years. Interestingly, he never spoke about his own imprisonment to the inmates there or his involvement in the Irish Revolution. On a number of occasions, Father Pat even accompanied inmates on death row to their execution by electric chair. He did travel home to Ireland a number of times in latter years and was home just a few years before his death. During his holidays here, he went to Nolan Park to see Kilkenny play and was mobbed by former IRA men who were delighted to see him again and shake his hand. Father P.H. Delahunty, the jailbreaking priest, died in Kansas on the 4th of April 1955 at the age of 75 years. He was buried at St. Mary's College, Leavenworth, Kansas, after his funeral mass, which was celebrated by the Archbishop of Kansas. A high mass was held in Carrageen, Munkine, 2 weeks after his death, with 23 priests in attendance. In 1957, a new street in Kilkenny City, Father Delahunty Terrace, was named in his honour. The street is aptly located on the grounds of what would have been the former Kilkenny jail. Now, just to finish up, there was some confusion about how many prisoners escaped from Kilkenny jail that day. One media outlet the next day reported 47 escapees, which was picked up by other media outlets. This was probably just a rough guess and maybe a leak from a warder. Some reported 43 escaped, myself included, but the correct figure would appear to be 44. This one person difference was because there were two Timmy Murphys amongst the escapees, one from Cork and the other from Limerick. Only in Ireland could that happen. The official prison register luckily still survives and exists in the National Archives of Ireland. And one thing they were very good at on that day was keeping records. So I think I'll just finish up by listing the 44 escapees for the historical record. The address given is the one given at the time of their capture and the one that's in the prison register. So it's from 1920-1921. It highlights how they cover the length and breadth of Ireland. And I'll apologise in advance for butchering some of these place names. Unfortunately, we don't know the exact order all 44 came out, because even people that were part of the group couldn't agree afterwards, because it wasn't the first thing in your mind. You weren't keeping track of who was where. You just wanted to get the hell out of there. So, to start off in no particular order: Con Conroy, South Terrace, Cork City; David Connolly, Clonay, Waterford; Daniel Gibbons, Armagh City; Edward Balfe, Enniscorthy, County Wexford; Edward O'Dwyer, Denmark Street, Limerick; Edward Punch, Frederick Place, Limerick; Father P.H. Delahunty, Curate Callan and Corramartin, Munkine; Frank Pine, Ballyporeen, Tipperary; Gerald Keneally, Youghal, County Cork; Henry Meaney, John Street, Limerick; James O'Hanrahan, Inistee, Kilkenny; James Power, Kilmacthomas, Waterford; James Thompson, Thomas David Street, Cork City; James Kelly, Glassell Hill, Offaly; John Grehan, Naas, Kildare; Jerome Ryan, Horse and Jockey, Tipperary; Jim Pollock, Mary Street, Cork; John or Sean Keogh, Ballinlough, County Meath; John Tobin, Ballynoe, County Cork; Joseph O'Connor, Terenure Row, Dublin; Joseph P. Kelly, Lusk, Dublin; Lawrence Condon, Fermoy, County Cork; Lawrence Fraher, Dungarvan, County Waterford; Martin Keeley, later Gorn, County Kilkenny; Michael Burke, Ballinor, Tipperary; Michael Kerwin, Enniscorthy, Wexford; Michael Murney, Cologne, County Down; Patrick O'Neill, Thomas Street, Limerick; Patrick O'Halloran, Scalaheen, Tipperary; Patrick Power, Carrick and Shirk, Tipperary; Sean Power, Doyle Street, Waterford; Sean Keelter, Arfort, Kerry; Thomas Barry, New Lawn, Wexford; Thomas Brennan, Ballytruckle, Waterford; Thomas Highland, Port Arlington, County Leash; Thomas Cairns, Bowman Street, Limerick; Thomas Leonard, Dungannon, County Tyrone; Thomas McCarrick, Ballinacroke, County Sligo; Timothy Murphy, Boherby, Limerick; Timothy Murphy, Killen Daniel, Whitechurch, County Cork; William Donoghue, Killalongford, County Carlow; William McNamara, Ennis, County Clare; William Orlim O'Leary, Clonee, County Wexford; and finally, William O'Mara, Carrickshire, County Tipperary.
That's where we leave it today. Thank you for listening, and please keep supporting your local library. Until next time.